What's the biggest thing holding you back from a seven-figure recruitment business? It's not your market, and it's not your work ethic. It's actually the hidden roadblocks in your business that you don't even realize are there. That's why we created the Seven-Figure Freedom Scorecard. It's a free diagnostic tool that helps recruitment firm owners identify the biggest growth barriers standing in their way. In less than 10 minutes, you'll get a personalized report showing you exactly where you're strong and where you're struggling, and showing you the next steps to build a business that scales predictably without burning out. If you're ready to stop guessing and start growing, then take the free assessment now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.
Most people, a lot of people do MPCs. I don't do MPCs. Maybe I probably should, but as a recruiter, knowing what works for you and being okay that you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. You want to learn from others, but take what makes sense and say no to the other and don't keep trying to do what everyone else is trying to do. And maybe they're successful at it and that's just not your cup of tea.
How many more placements could you make if more candidates replied to your outreach? Teresa Nordstrom has spent most of her career thinking about that exact problem. Before starting her own executive search firm, Teresa spent nearly 20 years as an HR leader. In one role, she cut agency spending by over $700,000 by building referral-driven hiring programs and filling most of the roles in-house.
One company, I gave away a Harley, which, you know, 20 grand's nothing in the scheme of recruiting. So each company I did kind of like, I would say recruit with a purpose, right? So a lot of people say, oh, employee referral, and they send out emails. It's like, how's that working for you? I created a fun atmosphere, engaged people.
Along the way, she realized that recruiting was the part of HR where she had the greatest impact. That insight led her to change sides and jump into agency recruitment.
Honestly, after about three companies of kind of setting myself apart as recruiting and employee referral of finding talent, I kind of realized I was pretty good at it. So one, I had a former executive reach out to me and at the same time say, hey, we need help. No one's been able to find talent like you have in the past. And then at the same time, I was helping sell a SaaS company and timing was just right.
In 2015, she left the corporate world and founded her own search firm, Talent Company. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. In this episode, you'll hear why messaging matters more than volume and how Teresa gets the right candidates to engage while repelling the wrong ones. Hi, Teresa. I'm so happy to see you. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, you bet. Always good to meet you. All right. See you again.
Absolutely. So, Teresa, let's start at the beginning. You spent years as an HR leader first. What made you decide to leave that world and start your own recruiting business?
Well, honestly, after about three companies of kind of setting myself apart as recruiting and employee referral of finding talent, I kind of realized I was pretty good at it. So one, I had a former executive reach out to me and at the same time say, hey, we need help. No one's been able to find talent like you have in the past. And then at the same time, I was helping sell a SaaS company and timing was just right. So,
okay, wait, let's delve a bit into that. So how long were you in HR before going out on your own?
Yeah, I'm like maybe 20 years. I have to think about that. So yeah, almost 20 years, probably. Yeah, just around there.
All right. Awesome. And of the HR function, it was the recruiting that you really gravitated to and you got amazing results. What do you think it is about recruiting that appealed to you?
Well, so I was never a recruiter, but the big thing is as an HR professional, I think our role is to solve business problems. And the last three companies I went to, a couple of them were small, one was larger. Within the first week, I quickly heard that talent was the number one issue. And so I was like, I got to figure this out. And that's where my creativity came because I was bound and determined to find an answer. And so also, I found a lot of HR people don't like recruiting. So,
interesting. Okay, fantastic. What was this SaaS company all about? I don't know this story.
Yeah, so it was called Benaissance, and they're a healthcare SaaS company. And you know, so they're about $18 million. And when I joined, we were spending about $800,000 in recruiting fees in 9 months. So we were on the path to spend $1 million a year of a very small company. So ultimately, I was brought on to scale the company. And we did some work behind Obamacare, and that was the time that, you know, I had came on and such like that. But we sold within a couple of years. But within a few weeks, I was doing My former CEO was awesome. He kind of allowed me to do crazy things very quickly. So,
would say more about, so is this the company where you reduced recruiting spend from 800,000 to 40,000?
Yeah. Okay. I did, you know, And actually, not that I want to, that 40,000 was kind of a unique situation, but ultimately within a few weeks, I'm a huge employee referral fan, which is kind of crazy because I'm a headhunter and I get paid for that. But yeah, I mean, I went in, I remember actually was like, how much money are we spending? And that was the math, right? Literally 800,000 in 9 months. And we were on path, obviously, to do about 1 million. And so at the end of the day, I was like, this company has a great story. How do we tell it and get it out there? Because a lot of HR just goes directly to a headhunter, which, you know, we most of the time would like. I think I was able to build it internally, but honestly, with a lot of creativity and the ability to tell stories about the company and the potential. And yeah, I don't know. That's kind of what I became known for, is being creative.
Okay. So I feel like this is going to be a theme that continues throughout your story. So let's dig into that. So you felt like, okay, my role is solving business problems. What's the number one problem? Oh, it's talent. Okay, well, let me figure that dimension out. Yeah. And you realized that the way that most of your colleagues were doing it was just going straight to a headhunter. And you're like, well, you obviously earned your value at that tech company. That's for sure.
And JJ will probably see this. Honestly, yeah. I mean, I was rewarded very quickly because of the value I add. And he still tells me that. So anyways, but yeah.
That's so nice. Now, you mentioned something about an employee referral program. Can you elaborate on how did that work?
Yeah, well, actually, it was a third company. One company, I gave away a Harley, which, you know, 20 grand's nothing in the scheme of recruiting. So each company I did kind of like, I always say recruit with a purpose, right? So a lot of people say, oh, employee referral, and they send out emails. It's like, how's that working for you? And, you know, honestly, I created a fun atmosphere, engage people, help people within the company tell the story of the company and find out who we were recruiting. And, you know, I think each company, I got better at it. And the last company, Benaissance, obviously, I made a huge impact on that. And I just realized at that time, I'm like, oh, I can make pretty good money doing this. And I think it was what I was naturally good at.
All right. Okay. When you say telling the story, first of all, how did you know that that was important?
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, that probably came at Conagra Foods. So when I went there, I supported accounting and finance, and I supported one particular department, which was internal audit. I want to say they were supposed to have 36 people, and they were never staffed over maybe 30, 32. And this audit department was one of the best. And auditors don't want to be career auditors. The best don't want to be career auditors. And this leader wouldn't allow career auditors. So all of a sudden, when we started going to market and telling people, because they don't want to move from big four to audit, because they don't want to be an all-life auditor. But I was able to say, hey, all these people are growing into the business, which honestly, so many of them are CFOs and head of audit. And I was able to tell that story and help them see the vision. And the biggest thing is go after their pain point. You know, they don't want to be an auditor. They want to grow into the business. And so that's why I was a marketer, right? You got to know someone's challenges, pain points, and speak to them and see how you're going to solve them. So, yeah.
Okay. This is awesome. So have you studied marketing, or is it just like you intuitively knew that telling stories is a great way of communicating?
Yes. I think it's just intuitive. I mean, I always use the Super Bowl, like hello on the Super Bowl. I mean, these days they might have the back of a label or a ingredient thing, but that's not what you're like. Job descriptions are ingredient labels. Like, you know, you don't recruit talent with a job description, right? You recruit talent with the ability to tell the story, you know, your pain points versus that's why job descriptions are just words on a paper, and even more so these days. But yeah, it was my natural and I think intuition to just like, how do I understand the person and the company? I'm so competitive that I was like, I got to figure out a way. So I think it's really just down that. So
now, how did you elicit this story from your stakeholders? So when you're internal, I guess it's the same now with your external clients, but at the time you had internal clients and they don't understand, like they're like, here's the job description. Can you fill these roles? They don't understand how to really sell this opportunity and tell the story. So how did you elicit the story from them in a way that would speak to those pain points and allow you to attract the candidates?
Yeah. So one thing is, I think, understanding the business, right? You know, it's like we go in and ask for keywords. I'm like, well, that's not going to work. But I think it's like, honestly, it's reading between the lines a lot of times. And reading between the lines, being able to connect the dots. And I will look at the job description, but often I definitely don't need a job description to work for. And I think it's just like, what are the top things you're really looking for? Okay, what does that mean and look like? You know, and here's another thing. I ask for quotes, examples, because people want to know what is going to look like or what it's going to feel like. So how can I use quotes, even from employee surveys and things of that nature, to tell the story versus just regurgitate? I mean, honestly, a lot of people regurgitate job descriptions and keywords.
Yeah, yeah. So you went for like quotes from employees. Did you actually interview any of the employees to get those quotes, or was it just like from internal surveys and that kind of stuff?
Both I did. And actually nowadays, when I'm talking to a client, I may ask them for them, but if they tell me something, then I'm like, that's exactly where I go. It's like my antenna is always on listening for those factors. And I think that's the one thing about being able to understand the business. And I might not be an accountant, and you do not want me being an accountant, but I at least have gotten to the point where I really understand, you know, how it works internally. But yeah, I think it's about listening for it. And sometimes the client, actually a lot of times, they don't think about that. Like you say, okay, what do people say? I want a really good culture. Okay, what does culture mean? And, you know, like, what's it feel like, sound like, look like? You know, another thing is most people I recruit, they want progression, they want promotion. And so I actually have a kind of a campaign going out now. I'm recruiting for a leader. This person develops people like crazy. One of my messages is five examples of moving them from staff to senior to director. And that's one of my messages. It's like, hey, here's proof. So, yeah.
I love that. That's brilliant. So you gather the information, you understand the business itself. You look for as many examples as you can. You also understand what are the target candidates really looking for? Like, so they're looking for that progression. What are their pain points? They don't want to be a lifetime auditor. Then how do you craft that into a story or a message that is going to resonate?
I guess it depends. I think one is, like I said, understanding the pain points and then saying, if you don't want to be a career auditor, then this, you know, if you don't want to have to, I have a candidate I'm recruiting from a little outside of Omaha, and I know they live in a rural area. I said, if you don't want to have to commute to Omaha every day, right, on those icy roads, you know, I think so each person's a little bit different, but in general, if I'm going to do an ad or something, it's being a little bit bold too and making some assumptions on what they want and just speak right to them. It's almost like digging at them. And then I think on a personal level, if I'm doing one-on-one, whether it's video or messaging, you know, I'll make some assumptions and guess on what I think their pain points are. And I'm sure I'm wrong sometimes, but if you do it long enough, you know, you at least have some sense. So
this is brilliant stuff. By the way, we've good. Just gone straight into the deep end here, Teresa.
Yeah, good.
So this is gold. Thank you for sharing that. So you had that huge success at this healthcare tech company, and you built. Oh, you didn't fully explain the employee referral program. So you mentioned something about Harley Davidson. What's going on here? Like, what? How did you structure and then internally promote these referral programs?
Yeah. So I guess one thing is if you're going to do employee referral program, what are your people into? So the Harley, it was a construction company. What do guys want to do? And yes, they're mostly guys out in the field. They like Harleys, you know, they like race car, things of that nature. So each company I went to, what was the audience? Like, who are you trying to ask for referrals? So that was one thing. The other thing is it starts at the top. I tell you what, I mean, at Interstates, all the leaders got engaged. I had, you know, one president on a Harley actually like doing messaging out to the field when they didn't have internet in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, at the other companies, actually at Benaissance, you know, we had our story. I got them engaged saying, here's what we can do. Here's the potential outcomes. And honestly, like that, we had like, ours was a, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. College World Series is a big thing, you know, type thing. And so we said, okay, we'll get tickets behind home plate. But, and we'll do, for each time they gave a referral, if they just got an interview, it was a quality candidate, they got one ticket. If they had 10, if they got someone interviewed, they got 10. But the key is also, that's a key, is referrals have to be based on quality. Because I did learn that the hard way when you ask for referrals and they send you everyone. But like at Benaissance, literally, we had it as a secret. And the day of, we had all the leaders and like we had, we called it, something about home plate or something. And we had this big, you know, kind of gathering. And JJ, the CEO, is the one that spoke. And often getting the leaders engaged, plus it's fun. Like, it's not about getting up front and asking people for referrals. It's about fun. It's about engaging people in the story and making them want to be part of it and then keeping it alive. So I did, honestly, I did lots of little different programs like that. But nowadays with AI, it'd be really easy to make things up. It was harder then when you had to be creative on your own, but.
So the Harley Davidson, was that the was that a prize for the person who got the most referrals, or how did that, what was that?
Yeah. I mean, it's called Join the Ride, right? JTR. And, you know, this is a construction company, right? So, you know, superintendents, electricians, not easy to find. And I think that honestly, I think the biggest thing was engaging people, and it can't be part of the culture, right? It's like recruiting with the purpose. It's like, let's not just have pizza parties. Let's have something that engages people in a purpose, you know, type thing. But yeah, it was a prize. So that's where on that one particularly, we had a couple of them there where it's, you know, one key if you give a qualified referral, and then 10 if you got someone hired, and then you do a drawing at the end, you know, type thing. So that was in that case. And then I think the other ones were something similar, you know, where you get your name in the hat for something, and it was one, it was tracked, but you were communicating it too, right? You can't, you know, you want to have fun with it and make it an engagement activity versus just a tactical, like, policy. I mean, literally, your employee referral is usually a policy.
This is fantastic. You know? So, exactly. And they don't work usually. That's the
thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you have to, like I said, you have to, and some are, I mean, mine almost might have worked too good in a couple of the companies. Like, it's like, okay. But I mean, we won't go down this factor, but I think, you know, you can recruit with the purpose, even from diversity and things of that nature these days. And I think there's a lot of assumptions around employee referral. But I have now taken that into my space, right? As an external recruiter that, you know, I need to continue to do a better job of referrals on myself. But that's also how I...
Listen, having a ChatGPT license for your team is great, but it is not enough. ChatGPT requires you to stop what you're doing, switch windows, copy information, and ask it to do something. AI agents are different. They're built into your workflow and they take action automatically. Recruiter Flow is an AI-first ATS and CRM with built-in AI agents working for you around the clock. Their encoding agent structures your data. Their job change alert agent monitors your database for opportunities. Their note-taking agent captures conversations and updates your CRM. This isn't about working harder. It's about letting AI handle the busy work so you can focus on relationships. To see it in action, go to recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. Most recruiters try to convince new clients they're credible on the call, but the best time to establish trust is long before the sales call even starts. That's exactly why we've launched a new service here at Recruitment Coach called Trusted Voice Video. In just 30 minutes a month, we help you to create 30 days of professional video content. No scripts, no awkward performances. You simply show up for a guided conversation around topics you already know inside out. We'll tell you exactly what to talk about, what equipment you need, and help you feel confident on camera. We'll make sure you look and sound great, even if you hate seeing or hearing yourself on video. And we handle everything else. You'll get to work directly with my colleague, Sanjay. He's the guy who produces this podcast you're listening to right now, as well as my own LinkedIn videos. If you want clients showing up already pre-sold on working with you, book a free video content strategy call at recruitmentcoach.com/video.
Get work as referrals.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's shift gears and talk about that. So What year was it? Oh, happy 10-year anniversary,
by
the way.
I think actually, honestly, it's this week. It's this week for sure. So
2015 was...
I know, right?
That's crazy.
I'm my best employer.
Amazing.
My most tolerant.
And so 2015, what gave you the... So you just thought, wow, like hedge hunters are making good money and I'm good at this. Why should I be doing that? Is that like, what was the thought process?
Well, I actually had a former executive reach out to me because I had recruited internally for that executive, done a lot of different things. And that individual's at a new company and just said, hey, Teresa, you know, we're struggling. I think and I knew his story. I knew how to tell his story so dang well. And so it just was timing. You know, it's like, okay, well, we're selling and, you know, okay. And that, you know, honestly was I was very fortunate to kind of walk into some work based on my history.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Great. So, but here's the thing. This is a bit like you're going to the dark side, right? And you're, because your whole thing was you were saving companies external, you know, placement fees. And now you're on the other side and you're asking for placement fees. How did you reconcile that in your mind? Was that a conflict?
I have to admit, I struggled with it for quite some time, probably until like after 2021 or so, because I kept thinking, well, why don't they just do this internally? And over time, I have realized that there's times and purpose places for hiring a recruiter. I'm not going to be the recruiter that says you always need to come to me to get great talent. You know, I think that there are times in that people come to you, you know, it's for capacity, it's for confidentiality, it's for speed to market. It's because, I mean, a lot of recruiter HR people don't want to do the work or they don't have, honestly, it's a lot about the time. So it took me a time to understand that it was a mental process for me, literally probably the biggest challenge I've had because I was known for employee referral, but now I just know I add a different value in a different way. And I'm not going to say, oh, you need to hire a recruiter, because I feel like some recruiters always think we are the only solution and we're not. So, and business, we run a business, right? HR is supposed to be, you know, you have to manage budgets internally. And so, you know, I had to manage that internally personally. But yeah.
Got it. And so, yeah, I think you're right. A lot of recruiters sell against TA or try and like position it as like, we're going to get better results for you. You recapped a few points there, like confidentiality and, you know, speed to market and things. What are the cases where you think it makes business sense to actually outsource this to a trusted recruiting partner?
Yeah. Well, one thing is internally, a big challenge is hiring leaders. You never get the people you want quick enough because talent acquisition is rarely set up to succeed internally. I mean, the number of requisitions these people are handling is mind-boggling. Like, I can't even handle a fifth of what they do, maybe a tenth. So I think it makes sense for one, like some of these roles. I mean, honestly, we don't get paid to fill the easy jobs. I'd love all the easy jobs. I'd love all the jobs over 200, but you know, give it to an external recruiter when you know that the internal client needs the role filled. And honestly, you're going to hold them back if you're not able to get that filled. So, but and then a lot of times it's skill set, especially with some of my clients in small middle market. One, they probably don't even have some of the sourcing skills and they don't have the time to do it. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's like, you know, a lot of my clients engage me like I'm working directly with the CFO. I'm directly working with the hiring leader, which I appreciate, but I never cut out HR. I actually have to challenge some of my hiring leaders. I'm like, don't cut out HR. Like, that's what recruiters do. And I've never done that. I don't intentionally do it. I'm sure sometimes they feel like it because the client comes to me. So,
yes, absolutely. So this is really, this is interesting. I think you're right. Like, if there's a case where capacity, like a company's growing quickly, then their demand is going to be too much for whoever's, you know, internally got this on their on their job description. They may not have the skills or they may not have the capacity to deliver the talent like you can. How do you suggest recruiters partner with HR? Because sometimes, I mean, I'll be honest, Teresa, like I'm from the other side, right? Where HR can be like really block you from, like you are, let's assume that both parties are sincerely trying to get the best outcome, right? And so as an external recruiter, I am trying to help this business to find the best people. And the HR person's like, oh, you can't talk to the manager, you can only go through me. But I'm like, you can't answer my question. I'm asking you questions. And you're like, you know, you can't give me the information I need to be able to tell your story, you know, in a compelling way to candidates who are not looking for a job, right? So, and also you're just slowing down this whole process. So like it becomes a barrier to actually success. How do you suggest navigating that in a way that does not alienate or upset the HR person that gets them on side?
Yeah, well, that's a tough one. I mean, I have had a couple incidents. I've been fortunate on the other hand. I'm trying to think about that. One is talking to them. You know, I think that because they, internal recruiters get frustrated when your client reaches out to you, unless they've already opened that door. And, you know, I've had a couple conversations that I can think of with a couple individuals where it's like, I mean, it's like, I am here to help you. I think engage and keeping them in the loop all the time. And honestly, there's a couple people I've had to say, like, have you talked to so-and-so about this? Do they know you called me? So, you know, I'm letting HR know rather than just letting it go. I'm letting HR know. Now, have I had HR kind of block me? Absolutely. And it is frustrating. And I am not able to do my job as well. It's just a fact. Now, some HR people can explain the business and know the business very well, and others cannot. But one of the things is I think that I have been brought in by quite a few HR people that know me and they trust me. And sometimes I'm literally in on their Slack channels. I'm in on scheduling everything myself directly with the CFO. And for me, those are the best clients. The large companies are probably not going to be my people because I'd have to be on the outside. But it's an ongoing challenge. But I don't purposely go around HR. I figure, hey, everyone else is saying that, so I'll be different and not.
Okay, there you go.
And I really don't want to. I really don't want to. You know, I'm the first person to say, like, I mean, honestly, I've helped people recruit. Like, I've helped people do employee referral. I've helped them because at the end of the day, I want to be in their back pocket when they do have a role that they can't fill. How do I add value to them?
So. Hey, here's something. We've never talked about this, but because I didn't know your kind of backstory about the referrals and how successful you were at that. I know a headhunter in Canada, and what she does is she recruits recruits sales teams for pharmaceutical companies. And what she does is she combines her service with their employee referral program, and she sets it up for them. And basically what she does is says, look, give me all of your sales roles. And what we're going to do is, first of all, there's a monthly retainer. So it's like a mini RPO. So there's a monthly retainer. But what I'm going to do is, like, I'm going to pay your internal referral incentive out of my fee. Okay. And I'll help you set it up. And what I'm going to do is set up I'm going to make a landing page, a website, like a mini site for for this campaign. And it's going to have video and like testimonials and stuff. I'm going to help you build, like tell the story and build it out as a page. It's going to be hosted on my website, but it's going to be exclusively for your company. And each employee, we're going to give them an affiliate code. And I'm going to craft the messaging. Of course, they can change it if they want, but I'm going to craft the messaging for them to send to people and share on social media to generate people to go to this page. They will get credited with that referral. And then if we hire one of those people or you hire one of those people, I'm going to screen them. So if they're not really right, then we'll filter them out. And if they do get the job, then I'll pay the referral fee to the internal employee.
Yeah, that is a great idea. And, you know, nowadays, there are great systems right that for that. Before, we had to like do all this tracking. I mean, well, that's, you know, I love employee referral. I think it was so much fun and I had great success. And honestly, we're going to have to talk about that because I believe in it so passionately. And I think telling the story is very key. A quick story on that. I actually had a leader at one of my companies. This gal was a big four, like senior manager, was a tax person. And I was like, well, do you know anyone? She's like, oh, I don't know anyone. I'm like, how do you not know anyone? You came from big four. She goes, well, I never thought about, like, she hadn't, employee referral wasn't even coming to mind. And I was like, so I think it's interesting how you have to plant the seed and help them know how to network, you know, type thing, because otherwise even your people that are closest to it are not thinking about it. So I don't know. I just think that that makes a lot of sense. And I think the tools we have today make it way easier than they ever used to be, you know, with the video and even the systems to track that is huge these days, employee referral. So
one of your Gallup strengths is good enough is never good enough. Can you talk about that and how, like, your mindset?
It's tough. Maximizer, I'm a big Gallup fan. We are out of Omaha, but in general at Best Buy, we were best friends with Gallup for years. Maximizer is my number one. Good is never good enough. And everyone's always surprised. Competitive is actually six, but they're surprised competitive is not higher. Well, Maximizer makes up for it. But, you know, I think the thing is, I mean, it's a constant challenge. One is I have extreme speed and then the good, never good enough. And so I think that when clients come to me, I honestly just about kill myself trying to get the job filled. And of course, I love my speed, but I'm like, but I think it's just like, it's a little bit afraid of failure, I think, too, right? You know, and I want everyone to like me. And I'm afraid to fail. And it keeps my bar very high. I do know that. But at the end of the day, I just feel like, I mean, my off button doesn't go off very often, which is a challenge when you're an entrepreneur. That is, it's tough. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a double-edged sword because on the one hand, it's a good thing, right? Because your, you know, speed and your work rate and your efficiency and everything is really high and you're focused on getting those results. But at the same time, it means maybe it's hard to switch off and maybe do you find you're quite hard on yourself?
Oh, extremely. I mean, literally, I'm working on a role, had someone helping me and I was talking to a friend like, oh, I haven't found anyone. She's like, Teresa, you got it on Sunday. It was like Wednesday and I'm like starting to panic. And so, you know, actually, I don't know if you probably don't know Gallup very well, but there's called balcony behaviors and basement behaviors. So that's a strength of mine when I use it to its full potential, but it becomes a basement behavior when it goes to the extreme. And so most of us always have that, right? Where if your strength can become your, you know, biggest debt type thing. But yeah. So, and I think the maximizer, it's like, you know, I feel like I'm usually pretty ahead of the game, whether it's technology, I always want to be doing different things. So it always keeps you going for the next things versus I'm stuck in my own way. I figure what I'm doing today, I have to keep changing and evolving because I can't get the results that I get today doing the things I did 6 years ago or even 3 years.
That's interesting. What are some of the things? Actually, I'd like to ask how you've changed and evolved. But first, it would be helpful to get just a bit more info about your practice. So what's the structure of your team and how do you work?
Yeah, well, it's pretty much me. I mean, I've been kind of through a different couple iterations. I have a more entry-level virtual assistant. I've recently brought on more of an operations manager, I'd say, because I've realized that I need someone who can think fast, take all my words, all my energy, boil it down and go, okay, get stuff done. And I was a good leader, I think, in corporate, but now I'm kind of like, hey, I throw it over the hurdle, you know, and I need you to take care of it. The other thing that I've really done, because I've decided for right now, I don't really want direct reports full-time on the staff. I have had them in the past, but I do some split fees. So I'm part of MPA Worldwide. I've done some split fees this year. Splits are not easy because I want to run one certain way and I have an extremely high bar. And, you know, I have a couple clients, they want me messaging people. Like they feel like my voice is why they hire me, not my voice, but the way I go after them and because I know a leader. So, you know, it's split fees. I'm trying to do more of them because this year I've been very fortunate, extremely busy, but it's taken a toll on me. So.
Gotcha. Okay. What's been the toll?
I've had a lot of work. And of course, not easy jobs. I think we're interviewing way more people than we used to, which is kind of interesting based on the market and the clients want to see more. But, you know, I've been super busy since we were in Florida. Like the first week of February, I thought, oh, I'm gonna have all these jobs filled by May. I mean, I have been pretty much constant go, new jobs come out of nowhere since then. And with my personality, I know I need breaks, and I haven't had very many breaks. And like most entrepreneurs, it's hard to actually, if you don't go somewhere, it's hard to actually take a break mentally. And yeah, I mean, that's part of my biggest challenge is I, you know, everyone knows I probably don't shut down easy. And then when I'm so busy, so, and I think my sense of urgency, you know, I actually have a couple clients, one particular that will call me Friday before a holiday and go, we really need someone extremely quick and we're coming to you. I'm like, oh. So I think I have to work on the holiday. So, but I'm trying to manage expectations better.
Good. Trying. Fantastic. So this circles back to the team then. So it's just you're solo plus the operations person. Are they full-time? Are they part-time?
They're part-time. Yeah. Okay. They're probably like even quarter-time, you know, type thing. But yeah.
Got it. So. And then you have a virtual assistant as well. Are they onshore, offshore?
One is offshore. The other one is actually in Minneapolis. You know, so I'll actually, that was one thing for me. Everyone, I think, you know, everyone runs a recruiting business differently. And I finally learned that I need to run my business different than someone else because everyone else may do awesome with a couple entry-level VAs. Not good for me. I kept failing that, to be honest with you. So I think I actually finally got there. It's not easy though. So anyways, I found someone that was in a day's drive, 5-hour drive, you know, and I used to live in Minneapolis. So for me, I felt like, I'm gonna pay more. And I figure at the end of the day, I think I'll get the reaps and benefits and I'm okay investing in the business. So, and myself actually.
Teresa, so. There's one thing I've learned is that there's not one right way of doing this, right? One thing I would say though, is that a VA doesn't have to be entry level. Something that my friend Greg Fisher wrote about on LinkedIn recently is that in every country in the world, there are corporations, there are executives, there are people selling to executives, right? And so you could hire someone in another country. Doesn't mean that they're going to be entry level necessarily,
sure.
Right?
So yeah, yeah. You know, for me, I think I'm all about remote, but I feel like the way that I operate, I know how to lead a team. I knew how we led best, a lot of brainstorming in it. For me, I felt like if I want to be one-to-one this person, maybe a couple times a year, just to have a half day thing. And it's different. And even like for them to be the way I work, it's probably not like I'm hard to follow. And I know my limits and I know my strengths, and having that ability to be around someone if I need to be and them to like absorb, you know, I learned so much from working around people in like Best Buys and ConAgra's of the world that I felt like someone could probably learn the way I work better the more time we were able to spend. And for me, time was an issue. The time distance was a challenge. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the biggest thing though. I think I mentioned that in some things. A lot of people do MPCs. I don't do MPCs. Maybe I probably should, but as a recruiter, knowing what works for you and being okay that you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. You want to learn from others, but take what makes sense and say no to the other and don't keep trying to do what everyone else is trying to do. And maybe they're successful at it and that's just not your cup of tea. So.
Great. That's a good takeaway for sure. So let's talk about this then, because you're like, you've had a great year. You're busier than you've ever been. So what is your business development and your marketing strategy?
Do we have to talk about that right now? I think it's results. I think I have a pretty good LinkedIn presence. I've been really working hard at being more consistent with that. But you know, I think it's results. I am not the model for how you want to do business development.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just not. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say that I don't do true business development. And some people probably say I do, and I don't know it, right? I think that, honestly, I feel like that's probably the case, because otherwise I wouldn't have clients come to me. I have a lot of repeat. This year I've been very successful, particularly with a few clients who I've rebuilt their teams for. But, you know, that's because I probably engage and know their businesses very well. So I think LinkedIn, and I believe my background in HR, whether I was their HR business partner or their peer, like they were an HR professional and I was their peer, that's where a lot of my business comes from.
Okay. So you had this network of executives that you worked alongside, and they saw the results that you were producing, and then maybe they've gone on to other companies. And so, of course, that is a phenomenal source of business, and that your relationships and the results have generated those long-term, you know, connections that result in work. But still, there must be some touch points, some activities that allow you to keep in touch with people or to find out when they're doing interesting things. Like, how do they just literally fall out of the sky? Or do you have anything proactive that you do to try and encourage those, you know, the work to come to you?
So kind of no. I mean, I have one of the things I'm focusing is quality, right? Like, I have found that I'm not a person that's going to pick up the phone all the time. You know, as you were saying that, the one thing I think is there's a couple of people that I've supported. I think it's maybe my how. So my goal is to make the hiring leader, the HR person's job as easy as I can. And, you know, I actually had a client, I used AI to summarize all the interviews, but it's like, I think, like, for example, I had one hiring leader who said, "Teresa, you make it easy." And you know what I do? I make her a Google folder. I have a submittal form. I do not just flip a resume with regurgitated AI notes. That's what I do not do, which takes a lot of time. But I have that. I have all the resumes in this Google folder. You know, I think it's like, how do I make their job easier? And does everyone want that? No. But I think that my goal is when they get a resume, that they can look at it within probably 30 seconds and say, "I want to interview this person." And I have a pretty high hit ratio. So I think that's a big part of it. Otherwise, there's certain people that I reach out to. And honestly, this last year I've been so busy, I have not been as proactive, but I'm selective. I definitely don't mass. I will tell you, video. So I was just talking to my business manager. I was like, "Okay, what are we going to do for Christmas?" And I said, "You know what? I'd rather do 20 videos and sort of write some corny email, you know, type thing." So I will probably just, you know, kick off 10, 15 videos. Say, "Hey, Mark, you know, haven't talked to you for a while. Appreciate all, you know," whatever it is, just to touch base, because I think that's way better than a email or even a gift. And I'm cutting out, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah. So.
All right. Awesome. Let's talk about this. So you do show up consistently on LinkedIn. So you are doing a great job there. And so no doubt the people you're connected with are seeing your content, and that keeps you top of mind with them for when they're hiring, right? Talk about video, because it's something I think you're doing a great job with. And I guess there's two use cases there. One is video on LinkedIn, but the other you just mentioned is like sending video messages personally to each individual. So can you talk about when that became part of your repertoire and how you handle that?
Yeah. Well, actually, back in 2017, I actually have the document. It says, "I'm going to be the Gary Vee of recruiting." I'm a little bit grumpy because I tried that. I mean, I was like going to do it right, you know, and I never could get through it. But honestly, I was doing one-on-one video, I'm pretty sure 2018 or 2019, you know, type thing. Now, am I consistent? No. When I really need someone, like right now on the harder roles, I will do email, I will do LinkedIn, I will do video, I will do audio messages. And actually, I just tried something new lately where I do a kind of a overview of the job if they haven't responded a few times and send that to them, right? You know, type Great. Thing. And I actually gave it to one of my recruiters to use so I could tell the story and she could, hey, here's more information. But so I think
Hold on. Go ahead. Before, let me just press pause on there. When you say an overview of the job, that was by video? Was it like a screen share? Was it just you on camera? What does that look like?
Yeah. Well, I've done both. I mean, I was actually I was doing this literally back at ConAgra in like 2013 or something, but not as well, right? Because now you have different tools. But so like for this one, I have lots of video tools, right? So I had Dove, I have Hippo Video or something like that. And I just said, hey, Teresa Nordstrom, I'm a headhunter. You know, this is the senior accountant role I have, a little bit about the company. You know, I try and engage them. One of them might be over a minute. A lot of people don't want to name the company. This company in particular, even if someone goes to the hiring leader, she's going to give me credit. She actually already did that because I actually shared the company's name and that candidate went right to the client. So she's like, hey, is this your candidate? So anyways, I'll have a personalized one. I could just say, hey, Mark, let me just share more with you. But in this case, I actually did a generic one and then sent it to a recruiter that's helping me on a job so she then could use my video. I think, you know, one, you probably, because I have a good following on LinkedIn, I think people know it's me. I could use AI for it. I have plenty of tools, but it's just easier, honestly, just to do a dang video sometimes. And I don't worry about being super professional. You know, I just, and casual. And I think people appreciate that.
Love this. This is brilliant. And so while we're on the subject of recruiting and you're giving us a bit of insight into how you do that, I know you told me once that a candidate responded to you and said, I never respond to recruiters, but I had to respond to you. What do you think is different about your outreach that is cutting through the noise?
I think it goes back to that storytelling. I mean, I actually have quite a few screenshots of people saying, I actually have people like, oh my God, that is the best job description I've ever seen. And they're like, I'm not interested, but I had to tell you, like, I wanted to know who was behind it. And like, so I just took pride in that. But I do think that it's the personalized part and, you know, making the connection of, you know, maybe acknowledging that. You know, actually, I didn't tell you one time I did like 200. I did do BD one time. I did like 200 videos personalized, not AI, to potential clients. But honestly, I would much rather do that than get on the darn phone and cold call. Oh my God, any day. And I actually have one of my really good clients. I'll have to send her this. She actually said, Teresa, that's why I responded to you. You know, now I have friends that are like, oh my God, I'm never going to do video. I wouldn't want someone. Well, then I'm not your person. You know, I think that's the thing is not everyone's going to want it. Fine.
But not everyone wants a cold call. Not everyone wants a ton of email messages, right? So, you know, I think you found a combination that works really well for you. What's your process for doing those videos? Do you like do X number a day and batch them? Or like, what's your system?
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I should be more consistent. I think that, one time when I was really, I need to do some marketing. I maybe was doing at least 25, if not 50 a week. And I would just go batch them. And, you know, I did have a little, with that, I did learn you need a little bit of template, you know, but maybe the first line or two. And back then you knew it wasn't AI. You know, nowadays you can put the name in. Hi, Mark. Hi, Teresa. You know, I got those video tools too. But so in those cases, I'll do that. Right now, I will tell you on LinkedIn, if I do my other marketing messaging through email, whatever, I actually will get on the phone app and actually use either audio or video. Sometimes I'm cheat and I just do audio, which I think is fine. Otherwise, I do a video. And I think it's about if you're, maybe some people can just use one modal of communication like LinkedIn. For me, I feel like my different methods all put together are why people respond to me. Some jobs are harder than others. And sometimes I'm like, man, I got to go down video because these people I can't crack them. The lower level jobs are more difficult. anything. I mean, lower jobs are the more difficult jobs to fill, right?
So, true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you're sending videos, what tool are you using? Is it the, so on LinkedIn for a voice note, it's the mobile app. Yeah. But if it's a video, are you using Loom or are you just shooting the video on your phone and then uploading it?
Well, they have, if you click the, I think it's the attachment, it gives you the option of doing a video. And so you do the video, it actually saves it on your camera. So because, you know, LinkedIn, we all know they don't want you to, they're not, they want to keep you on their app. So for LinkedIn right now, and you know, people, some people are nervous about clicking. I've been pretty fortunate where I don't, I'm sure some are, but so there I will do that. If I'm connected to them, but like right now I am doing a follow-up on LinkedIn on the recruiter side that I do send them a video. Sometimes it's personalized enough. I do that. I will use Hippo Video or Dub is what I have. Loom has, I use Loom for other things, but I don't even know. Maybe Loom could do this, but you know, I can put in there, hey, like I like Dub because it comes up and it shows me like this and it says, hey, Mark, here's a role, like it has it on there. Each tool's a little bit different.
But wait, yeah. I didn't catch that. It has what on there?
Well, so it has the GIF, right? And it is like, I'll have to send you one. But it'll say, hey, Mark, a quick video for you. Or, hey, Mark, it literally comes up in like on the screen. Like, and so then you know, like you see me and then you can, I have a customized right there header on it.
Oh, okay. So, got it.
And Dub does that when you, it'll actually show you in the email or wherever, you know, where it says right there. Hippo does it, but you have to open it up. And you know, there's so many, I have so many video tools. I only use like one or two.
All right. So like on that, what is your tech stack, Teresa?
Yeah. Well, I'm a Krelate user. I use Krelate. I use Sourcewell. Sourcewell has been a game changer for me. I do use Quill, the AI tool that works into there. I do have full LinkedIn Recruiter. And I mean, that's the main one the main ones I use. I learned probably about 18 months ago, I made a focus. I'm like, I love systems, but too many systems. They all got to talk to Krelate. And Krelate's my number one source of information. I was all over the place. I get shiny object syndrome because I love systems, you know. And, but that's, I'm like, I don't know. Those are the key ones. You know, of course I use AI. You know, you can switch AI products all the time. I use ChatGPT. I do use the projects. And I don't know if you know, you can now share the projects. Like, so myself and Sarah Lynn, you know, like for submittals, I spend a lot of time on submittals. Now she's, I can send her that and we can like talk back and forth. And so that's the most part. I'm trying to be focused because otherwise you just spin your wheels and I'm already good at that on my own. So.
Yeah, no kidding. So, me too.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are great. So Krelate, Quill, Sourcewell, we know all those guys and they're high quality. So the ChatGPT projects and you're inviting team members to those projects, how are you using that for submittals? Could you explain that in more detail?
Yeah, let me think about that a little bit. So one, I mean, I have some submittals I've done from the past. I mean, sometimes they would take me a couple hours, maybe easy. And so I took a lot of those, right? I actually put them in there. I said, hey, okay, AI, create me a prompt, right, for a strong submittal. And then now I have a project for that, you know, type thing. Also, as you probably know in chat, you can tell it to remember, you know, things like to remember what you're putting in there. So now what happens is like if I take the job intake, it knows my senior director of FP&A. It knows the CFO literally because it all my interview notes are on there. So when I'm going to build out a submittal or Sarah Lynn is literally, it's like, I don't even have to put the job ad in there because it already has the job ad or the job description. It already knows who Jesse is. And then it has that. Now, granted, I'm really still working on not changing it a ton afterwards, you know, but so I think on the submittals, mine are always different too, which complicates things. But yeah, I think it's continue, you know, massaging it. Quill, I'm also doing a better job of like, I just ask Quill questions about the interview and things of that nature. So, but yeah.
Fantastic. I love that. I think, So you said you spent a lot of time on submittals. Why is that important to you?
You know what? From very beginning, I acted like a retained recruiter. I had no idea there was no other way. I mean, I did not know the hours I spent on that time in the beginning because, you know, I never was a recruiter before, ever, except for being an HR leader that once in a while hired. So I think that I don't think resumes don't represent people so many times. And actually, the people with the crappy resumes are actually sometimes the best because the people with the beautiful resumes are always looking for new jobs.
Good point.
Seriously, some of the people that I've placed, actually several this year, they would have, and the hiring leader wouldn't have interviewed them unless I was able to articulate things beyond their resume. And, you know, I could coach them on creating it, but sometimes a passive candidate doesn't want to do that, or even, you know, so, but I think, and when I wanted a hiring leader for me to go beyond the resume and for when they, if they do interview them, and there's a high chance they will, they don't have to spin their wheels on the stuff that I've already talked about. They might want to dig back in. But I had a peer one time that actually said, well, I give them as little's better. And I was like, well, don't you want to tell the client what conversation you had so then they can dig in? Nope, let them to figure that out. And I was like, I don't know. I feel like my goal is to give them as much information as I can so they can decide to interview them and I can save them time and they can go deeper on the interview. So,
yeah, absolutely. And the other good thing, in fact, I here's a shout out to Greg Dorshing. Do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was speaking at NAPS in Las Vegas this year, and Greg was also a speaker. And one of my takeaways from his talk was he wants his submittals, he wants the customer to get used to seeing the way he presents the information and love the way that they do it. And then be like, I don't want to deal with any other recruiters because I only want the submittals done this way from now on. And I was like, that's a great point, is you get the client to go to appreciate the way that you do things. And then everything else looks like garbage compared to what you're presenting.
I actually think that could be one of my things that, like I mentioned about like getting it all in one place. And I go, some clients don't want that. I'm like, do you want me, each time I do it a candidate, do you want me to have the submittal and the resume in there? And, you know, and like this one client's like, can you force rank them all? Like, I think that always asking you at what they want and if they want something different. And, you know, maybe they don't want all those notes. Like, please tell me if you don't want all my darn notes. And I've had a couple of clients that say they'd rather have my opinion than the resume. I'm like, dang. But, you know, I think, just resumes, even these days, we all know, I mean, you can write a really good resume pretty easy these days. So it's like, I always say I go beyond the resumes, right? My goal is to help the client understand a candidate beyond the resume and to help my candidates be known beyond their resume, because I think it's limiting. So, yeah.
Great, great, great point. I've lost track of how long we've been talking.
I don't know. Well, you know, it's 10:30. We're right at an hour. So, yeah.
All right. Well, one thing you mentioned earlier, I just wanted to follow up on. Are you retained or contingent or mixture? How do you operate, Teresa?
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, you know, one of my best clients, honestly, I might have been retained early on, but I'm just very exclusive. And honestly, they pay me so well. I'm kind of like, ugh, you know. So that one. And then another one, like this one big one I had this last year, like, we do like, they gave me 4 jobs in the week I was in Florida and we did like $8,000 each, you know, type thing. And so then it's like, okay, I have that. They know I'm 110% committed, but so I will do some contingent. I'm being way more selective because, man, can you go down rabbit holes? And, you know, fortunately I'm in a place where I don't think I have to do that. And someone once told me, my time would probably be better spent trying to get a new client if we're not committed. I just took on a new role. They had another recruiter working on it. And I asked them to tell the other recruiter that they couldn't submit anyone. And I will take it on exclusively. But yeah. And they're not retained, but I've worked on with this client at another company a lot. So, but yeah.
Got it. So it's a mixture.
Yeah.
And I understand that you focus on like Web3 and crypto companies. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Like, how much of your business is in that space?
Well, this last year is probably maybe 40%. But, you know, I got a 100-year-old manufacturing company, then I had a crypto company. I mean, pretty opposite of each other. Yeah, I did. So, I do want to focus on crypto and Web3. I will use that as a filter, but I have some great, if someone I know engages me and I think they're a great client, like they have the bar I do, they have a great story to tell, I'm going to work on their roles. It's not like I'm going to say, I'm not going to work on those. But that has been key that I finally identified what I was working on, because that was a struggle for years. Like, I work on anything. I could do anything. No.
So your focus, so the common denominator is accounting, finance, and C-suite. That's like the functional specialism, right?
And HR. HR is kind of obvious, well, although I do more accounting and finance than HR. So.
Okay. All right. Got it. So you have certain departments that you do more work in, and then you do enjoy the Web3 and crypto companies, but you're not limited to that.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Teresa, we could talk for another hour.
This was
a lot of fun. And so thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights. I really enjoyed that. I'm sure our listeners are going to love this as well.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, hey, it was always great to chat.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Teresa. And I'll speak to you soon.
Okay. Sounds good. Take care. Bye.
What was your biggest takeaway from that conversation? If you're watching on YouTube, please let me know in the comments. For me, the top two are related. Number one, candidates respond to stories, not job descriptions. Teresa's approach to recruiting starts by understanding the story behind the role. Where's the company going? What problem is the hire meant to solve? What does success look like in 12 months? She uses that context to frame the opportunity honestly, including the trade-offs, so candidates can quickly decide if this resonates for them. Number two, video cuts through the noise. Teresa records quick, informal videos to give candidates real context about the role, the company, the leadership. She doesn't worry about being overly polished. She focuses on giving clear, honest, and nuanced information. That clarity helps people self-select early and leads to better conversations with the right candidates. If you enjoyed this episode, please let me know by giving us a review on Apple or Spotify. And I'll see you next time.